and a good morning to you. Another version of Falcon Cast. It's John Michaels, it's Jay Adams, it's DJ Shockley. We're punchy already. I mean, we were sitting here before the show. I don't know how we bring up the movie Step Brothers, but you got to get loose
when you're ready for
preseason game number four.
Catalina Wine Mixer.
It is the Catalina Wine Mixer. It felt like the Catalina Wine Mixer down on the field against the Miami Dolphins. Wet, hot. I forgot why
you were dressed like it was the Catalina Wine Mixer.
Week, I can't wait to see that costume.
There it is, right there. Look at that.
Straight MIAO right there. Look, he was that. So 305, it was ridiculous.
Why is one arm so short? Why is my arm sticking out to the side?
Why am I in the background?
Look at that face of you in the background.
I think Bosek set all of that up perfectly.
So you're like, you know, Miami chic, and I'm like, you know, Cole chic.
Jay has on the exact same thing he has on right now as he has on.
It's my official uniform. I mean, it's like somebody asked me on Twitter if like I only own one shirt. I'm like, yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, I got on the bus. Dave Archer immediately.
Free, right?
Arch immediately looks at me and goes, "Good outfit, Don Johnson. Where's Philip Michael Thomas?" All right, I said, "I see how this road trip's going to go."
And that's the way it went.
Immediately. A lot to get to today on Falcon Cast. Obviously, preseason game number three. Huge test for the football team as they're starting to get ready to figure out who's going to be on the 53-man roster. We'll look ahead to tomorrow night's, or actually it's Thursday night's, not tomorrow night, Thursday night's game against the Ravens. I'm kind of lost. You're at this point of the regular sort of the preseason where all the days just run together, but we'll talk about that. Guys on the bubble trying to make the 53-man roster. We'll break with Bosek. We've got a video of the week. We've got all that good stuff. So let's dive right into it. We'll start with the Dolphins game from Saturday night down in Sun Life Stadium. Not the best effort out of the offense, not the best effort out of the offensive line. We knew going into this, guys, that it was going to be a huge test. And Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake, Olivier Vernon, and the Falcons' offensive line, continuity wasn't there, and they struggled a little bit.
Yeah, and you really see the big difference between Matt Ryan with pressure and Matt Ryan without pressure, right? He was going into that game with almost perfect, only one incompletion in his handful of plays in the preseason up to that point. And then the levee breaks, and Matt Ryan has four drives. He gets sacked on three of those drives, and you know, nothing happened for the offense on that first quarter. It was just one of those things where they overwhelmed us, and I think that is one of the things that's the lasting impression among fans. I mean, on social media, everybody's talking about the offensive line, and you know, rightfully so, because here we are, you know, less than 2 weeks away from a Monday night game against the Philadelphia Eagles, and suddenly this is a concern again.
And for rightfully so, the big reason is because obviously you got weapons galore on the outside. Everybody knows you got the Ferraris and, you know, you got the Maseratis on the outside. You got Matt Ryan, your $100 million
guy. We got the Mercedes-Benzes.
The Mercedes-Benz, absolutely. You got everything you want, but it all comes down to those five guys up front. It doesn't matter if those guys do not get it done, the guys on the outside won't be successful. And that's why it's such a big conversation. And obviously, John, you just spoke it up right there. The continuity up front hasn't been there. I think there's still some communication issues up front between the five guys who are in there. I believe this game here, Mike Persons actually started at center, and Joe usually starts, and he came in the second half. So they're still in this third game trying to figure out which combination works best for them. And until they find that out, the communication is still going to lack.
Right.
Things are still not going to be on target where you want it to be. And then it's going to be some things with getting pressure on Matt that you're going to have to deal with right now until they get that settled. And you look at it like, man, we got, you know, week and a half before we start our first game on Monday night, and you want to make sure all these things are intact, but you got to get it together before it happens.
Shock, you played the quarterback position, and I think one of the things that gets lost is the difference of taking a snap from a guy like Joe Holly, who you're used to, or difference of taking a snap from whether it's James Stone, who's played some center. Obviously,
right.
Mike Person was out there.
Right.
As a quarterback, what's the difference for you? How much do you have to get used to that guy that's in front of you?
It's a lot different because it's a simple thing as far as some guys' butt is a little bit lower. Some guys are a little bit higher. I mean, those things matter when you get up on it and you have a set way of how you receive the football. Some guys know when you snap it, sometimes you get the laces, sometimes you don't. And sometimes they understand when you're about to ask for it. And there's small things like when you got your hand on the center's butt and he understands as soon as you're about to raise your hand, the ball needs to be coming. And some guys, you just get that feeling with a lot of guys. That's why we talk about the continuity means everything between not just offensive line, between a center and a quarterback. And as a quarterback, you want to be the most comfortable you can.
Right.
And we talked about it. You just said, hey, you can see at times in the pocket he was uncomfortable. There was times where he couldn't step into throws just because he could feel the pressure coming inside. And it doesn't matter if you're, you know, a $100 million quarterback or, you know, you just start in the league. If you're uncomfortable in the pocket, it's hard for you to be successful. And it's not to pick on one particular guy or anything, but when a group does not get that together, the quarterback and everybody else around him really suffers.
I think you see in the preseason how important that center-quarterback relationship is because you've got so many different combinations, right? So, you know, you see T.J. Yates is out there with maybe James Stone at center, somebody he's not used to. I mean, how many fumbles have we seen right off the snap this preseason? And it happens across the league because you've got so many different combinations. The thing that stands out to me as far as your center goes is this is the guy making your line calls, right? So a big part of it is identification, it's knowledge, it's anticipation, knowing where guys are going to be. And when you've got somebody like maybe a Mike Person who's coming over and cross training, playing guard and center, you know, it's a different thing for him. Whereas somebody like a Joe Hawley or James Stone has been playing center for quite a while. I think there's an identification thing that comes into play on that kind of stuff, and I think that causes some confusion because really, you know, there's obviously the physical part of it.
Right.
We saw the physical part of it, but there's also the mental part of it, and that's breaking down in a matter of seconds what the entire line needs to
and
do.
And we got to give them credit. I mean, that's a pretty darn good defensive front. And
yeah.
It's only a couple more in the lead that's probably better. Or
I'd only say the Rams might be the only one better.
And so even though we were working through our own things, this was a defensive front that gives – it's going to give a lot of people fits. It's going to make a lot of people feel uncomfortable. So it's not just the offensive line didn't do anything. I mean, they played against a really solid group up front.
If there's a positive to take from this on top of that, you can also look at the fact that Dan Quinn's preached competition the entire preseason. You still have competition going into the last week of the preseason. So you've got guys trying to earn jobs, earn spots. It's not a given who are going to be the 7 or 8 offensive linemen kept on the 53.
And let me tell you something. Get used to this idea because you're not going to know who those starting 5 guys are until they trot out on the field for the first offensive drive on Monday night against the Eagles. You're not going to see, you know, the 4th preseason game is typically when a lot of starters take the night off.
Right.
I think you're going to see that on the offensive line. But during the practice week, it's going to be a state secret who those 5 guys are going to be. So there's a lot of tinkering going on behind the scenes, and that's going to continue all the way through game preparation for the Monday night game.
I even think, though, that they're going to play a few of those guys in this
absolutely
last game.
Sure.
I really believe because they still look like they're unsure about who those 5 guys are.
Sure.
And regardless of, okay, if they're the stars or you think they could be starring, they still want to see these guys in game action. They can see them in practice, but they need that same live action against other players that they can really grade them off and see how well they really form in this collective group.
Well, you got another good defensive front you're playing against, and we don't know how many players Baltimore is going to play this week, but traditionally they've been a team that's been able to get after the passer. Now, speaking of the good side, the Falcons defense continues to impress me week in and week out in the preseason. They've done a really good job simplifying the scheme and getting after the quarterback. Ryan Tannehill, the Dolphins take dink and dunk to a whole new level. They are the dinking and dunkingest team I've ever seen, but the Falcons continue to make it uncomfortable for Ryan Tannehill, and they didn't run the ball all that well. It's impressive to see what Dan Quinn's building on the defensive side.
And I think when you look at the defense, you're like, okay, there were a couple of plays here and there that they gave up, a couple of big plays. But this was the first game where you're facing like a really good quarterback, right? You had a rookie in the first week, and then obviously the Jets quarterback situation is
you mean
is what
it wasn't
it is.
Good, and then you
I mean, but so you see what a quarterback can do who's set in the system, who's comfortable and all those different things. And the defense played really well against them. And so that, I think, is really encouraging. You were able to get after the quarterback. You were able to keep them from getting those first downs that have always been haunting the Falcons. And I think there's so many encouraging things that you can look at from a defensive side of the ball. For as rough as it was on offense, to only lose that game by 4 points, I think is kind of a big deal.
And one thing I point to, John, you talk about Tannehill being a dink and dunker. I want to give the credit to the Falcons defense for that. Not giving up the big plays down the field, not giving up the home runs over the top and forcing Tannehill to check it down, and then you come up and make tackles. And we look at that ball game and how they were flying to the ball. You see hats always going. You see them trying to strip it out. You see every time one guy's holding him up, somebody else going for the football. And it's what Coach Quinn has been preaching since day one is – we want the football. Right. We want to go after it. We want to be aggressive. We want to be physical once we get there. And this defense is playing at that level. I remember one particular play. The Dolphins had a screen set up to the right side, and it looked like it was going to be a great play. And here comes Durant flying out of nowhere from the backside to make the play. That's the kind of thing that you can be excited about as a Falcon fan, that now you have some linebackers who can go sideline to sideline. You got a tackling machine in Warlow when it was third and one and the guard's trying to get up on Warlow and he tackles the guy for a one-yard loss on third and one.
And that was a great tackle.
Those are small things that you can be excited about, especially with your linebacker crew. We already talked about the D-line last week about how they're pushing the pocket. Now you got your linebackers going sideline to sideline, running, playing physical. This is a defense that's on the rise, and they're playing like they have something to prove.
One of the things in the NFL, you can go from being dead last, which the Falcons were a year ago, to 15th or 16th, only giving up about 40 yards less a game. Yeah. So you start making those tackles you guys just talking about on third down. You get off the field on a third and one where you weren't a year ago, and all of a sudden your defensive rankings fly up. And you know what that does? Gives Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Roddy White, all those guys an extra opportunity with the football. I trust enough on that side of the ball that it'll come around and everything will be fine. Warlow's been the guy to me that's been really the most impressive. I liked what he was able to do as an undrafted guy coming in here, garnering a starting spot on the middle linebacker core for the last 2 years. But he didn't always make the impact plays. And I know he talked about that in the offseason. I've got to make some impact plays. I've got to be a guy that makes them in the backfield instead of maybe a couple of yards down the field. And he's doing that so far. I think the scheme is freeing up these guys to be able to run around.
And one big thing I love about Warlow, he can be on the field for all three downs.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He plays sideline to sideline. He can cover guys. We've seen him, you know, knocking passes away, being a defender, and also being a guy who can rush to – for a guy like Warlow to be undrafted, come in and run the middle of the defense, and you have two – quote unquote veteran guys on the outside of you and Durant and Brooks Reed. I mean, he is doing a heck of a job.
I think my man crush on Paul Warlow has been well documented to this point, so I'm just going to continue to pile on here. You know, the thing that really has impressed me about Paul Warlow is the football mind that he is in the classroom. You ask any of the coaches, he's the first one in the classroom, last one to leave. The other thing is how seriously he takes his body, his diet, all those different things that come into play. When you're an undrafted guy, you have to work that much harder than a guy who was drafted in the top 10. So he takes that extremely seriously. Take a look at a side-by-side of Paul Warlow from day one of OTAs back when he was an undrafted guy and today, and the difference is striking. And all that does is it helps him. I think he's not going to get pushed around as much as maybe we saw last year. And he is going to be that guy who's going to make impact plays.
And the big part about it is I look at it as it's a maturity thing. He looks at it like, I have an outstanding opportunity in front of me, and I'm going to take full advantage of it. And I think he's doing it. You talked about how he's changed his body, his mind. Everything is in sync with being one of those great players. And we've seen guys who've been undrafted or late-round picks who've turned out to be 13, 14-year players in the NFL because of the small things they do, and Warlow is on that path.
One of the things, and I don't think Thomas Dimitroff ever gets enough credit for, is finding guys like this. I know it's easy to look and say, well, what did we do in the first round or the second round? You can fill out a football team and really just what Shock was talking about. You find some of these undrafted guys, and they outperform their contract. You start getting good productivity. I think Paul Warlow was on the field, if I read this stat correctly, 1,076 plays a year ago, which was second in the NFL. He was only making like $500,000. He far exceeded what he was making with his productivity on the field, and he's going to continue to do that this year. Now, next year, I think he's going to be doing a pay raise a little bit. I'll be your agent, Paul. Help you out a little bit. Another guy that we wanted to see this weekend was the debut of Tevin Coleman. Gets an opportunity to play, not a big opportunity, only gets four carries on the day. But I'll ask both of you, did we see enough out of him in day one to know that he's going to be a viable running back in this league, or does he need to play on Thursday night?
He absolutely needs to play on Thursday night. I don't think we've seen nearly enough of him. You know, the Miami defensive front, we've already talked about it, really came after the quarterback. as a side product of that. You know, Tevin Coleman was shut down on the backfield a couple of times. I want to see him get some more snaps, you know, really kind of get comfortable in this offensive system. I don't think he was timid or anything like that, but that first game, you know, jitters. I don't think four carries is enough to get you into what is ultimately going to be the biggest stage of your career at that point, which is Monday Night Football.
I think he's tough enough. We saw one particular play where he ran into somebody, got hit pretty hard and bounced off and still picked up 3-4 yards.
That was amazing.
That was the toughness that you expect and you want to see out of Tevin Coleman. But also, you want to see him situationally how he does. You want to see him on third down when he has to pick up a blitz. We got to identify certain blitzes, certain players, and know where they're coming from, where I have to pick up a guy. And then also, when I do have to get out and, you know, make some catches out the backfield. We didn't see enough situational-wise for me to say, all right, let's sit him and wait him for Monday Night Football. I think he still needs a couple more snaps in there situationally just to see where he will respond, how he will respond, and we'll wait to see then.
The best thing for me is he left the game healthy. Yeah. He didn't have to worry about any more soft tissue injuries. The hamstring seems to be okay, and I know Devontae Freeman working through his as well. You know, obviously with Devontae, you can err on the side of caution. You know that he's able to go out and play football. You saw it a year ago, big play against the Saints down the stretch with a big touchdown run there. He's a guy that can play, but for Tevin Coleman, I agree with both of you guys. Although a lot of the starters won't play, he's a kid that I think you get him at least the first quarter, get him lathered up, let him run the football a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, again, I really think that this is going to come down to a situation where who's going to be the best pass blocker out of these guys? I mean, they're all so similar, and they bring – you know they can run the ball. Mm-hmm. You know they can score. They can do all those things. But who's going to be able to pass block? And to your point, I mean, the situational stuff I think is really going to be the separating factor here.
What's big is, yes, you want to be able to run the rock. And obviously they're here because they can run the rock. But there's so many small things, especially when we talk about – in the passing game that they have to be good at. And as a running back, there are times when you have to get out onto your route to affect another guy defensively so you can open up something for somebody down the field. And if you're unsure if, I don't know if that guy's blitzing, or I don't know if he's going to come, or is that really my guy, you're out there playing slower. So, I mean, you're affecting the other concepts on the field. Mm-hmm. So you got to understand exactly where you fit in this offense and then be able to process it fast enough in a game to say, all right, I need to get out there. I need to make sure I'm in my correct spot. And that's part of him being in the game, knowing the situations, knowing the game. And if he doesn't, he probably won't be playing, because in this pass game, you need all guys on deck, make sure everybody knows where they're supposed to be. Because a lot of times the running backs, you look like, oh, they're checked down. They're just trying to get there. No, sometimes they're opening up areas for Julio to come in and catch that dig route because he's pulling that linebacker out. Certain things like that are big things that, you know, running backs have to really figure out and know. I got to get out my route fast, not just sit there and wait on somebody to come.
Speaking of Julio,
Hope,
somebody got broke off a big Julio chunk of change. I think Wu-Tang Clan said it a long time ago, cash rules everything around me. Straight, cash rules everything around Julio
straight
right now.
Cash, homie.
Straight cash. 5 years, $71 million, 47 of it guaranteed.
Highest paid.
More than anything, highest. You know what? I really like the way Julio handled this the entire time. It would have been real easy to be disgruntled. I want to be paid. Nothing but class coming out of Julio.
Absolutely, and I think this is a blueprint for future athletes on how to handle your business. You know, you understand you go into a contract year and you want to get the deal done and you feel like maybe you got to force the hand a little
bit. Sorry, I'm watching the highlights behind you.
By sitting out and by taking that disgruntled approach, because, you know, what happens if you get into week two and you tear your Achilles and then all of a sudden your negotiating power is gone?
Did you have to say Achilles? Like, really? I'm sitting right next to you, man.
Sorry. That's how we got you so cheap. So, you know, I understand that mentality. You got to try to get your money while it's good. But I think what you earn in what is ultimately going to be equity for your entire career, for beyond your career, because, you know, this is a franchise that will remember that you were there when they needed you. Yep. And you weren't taking the selfish route. You were the team player. I think that goes so much further than just, hey, I'm going to sit out and try to get a paycheck.
Jay, you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is he set a precedent, not just around the league, but especially for this organization, for a guy of his caliber, a guy who has played so much ball and been so productive, that you just go out and do what you're supposed to do, and this organization will take care of you. They understand that. They saw it. He came with training camp in shape. He came with the attitude of, it's all about the team. And that makes the guys up in the, you know, the guys with the suits on and say, all right, this guy is about this team. Right. He is all about getting better. And I think it's just a precedent for future situations for guys to come up and say, all right, this is how a franchise guy like Julio handled it. And all I got to do is put forth the effort on the field and put out a good product, and I'll get rewarded for it. And
Julio did that. As a fan, I don't think that this has been talked about enough. You know, everybody was talking about Dez Bryant when Dez Bryant was holding out and then he got his deal. It's like, this is one of those situations where, like, it's so refreshing to see somebody just show up for work, go about his business, and ultimately get rewarded for it. And I think that you can't overstate this about how to go about things the right way. And I really wish that this was something that was getting a little bit more attention across the nation, because, I mean, it's so rare to see this in the age of the diva wide receiver and the diva athlete that, you know, somebody's just like, you know what, I don't really care.
And here's the thing, Julio's opposite of that. When you think of guys off the field, you think about the issues that Dez probably that he had, and you look at your guy, you say, we won't have those issues. We know that. We know what type of person he is.
Right.
And we know when he comes to work, he's going to come to work. And then when he leaves, he's still going to be that same guy.
You know, and the thing to kind of jump on Jay's back there and talk about the point of, you know, the diva wide receiver, I've always been a guy that said, go get your money, because this is a league that 2.5 years is typically the shelf
right
life.
Out. Yeah.
You come in, you get paid, and you're out of here. But when you're somebody like Julio, you know you're going to be around this league for a long time. It would have been easy for him to be selfish and say, hey, I want as much as you're going to give me. A 47.5 guaranteed is a lot of money for a wide receiver. But he's earned every cent of it. For everybody that questions Julio, and there are people crazy out there that question, can he be that guy? He's one of the two or three best receivers in the NFL, and there's no question.
And he had 1 year where he was injured. But then I remember in the same game he was injured, he was playing another whole quarter and a half with a broken
and
toe.
And that's the
stuff.
Thing I mean, that drives me nuts about his detractors is people will say, well, you know, he's going to be out for at least 4 games because he's always injured. You want to know why he gets hurt? Is because he plays so freaking hard every week.
You remember San Diego a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
I'm on the field. He catches a pass and gets hit. And my hands aren't quite as big as Julio. And literally splits his hand in between the ring finger and the middle finger. He was out for about, I don't know, 10 plays. Taped back up. And you could see he couldn't hardly move his hand. Yet he's still out there making catches against the Chargers.
And that's the thing is you know, you can hit me with that argument about he gets injured and all this other stuff. I don't pay any attention to it. Because this is a guy who goes out, he plays hard. Injuries are part of the game. It's going to happen. But we've seen that he's going to be that guy in the big games. You remember the NFC Championship game, the way he took over that first half. That's the kind of player he is. You get back into that situation, that's the kind of player he's always going to be, injured or not. And he's just an absolute competitor, and I think he's great.
Well, competition,
he's awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome. Competition will continue this week. Preseason game number 3, Jay.
Yeah.
Preseason game number 4 coming up. You've got the Baltimore Ravens coming to town. More importantly, it's cut down from 75 to 53. Falcons already made the moves to get down to 75. Not really any surprises of the guys that were cut there. But there are a lot of bubble players that are fighting. We talked about the O-line fighting for roster spots this week.
There are going to be some familiar names, I think, when all is said and done and the dust settles that end up out on the market. And it's it's crazy the way things have worked out, but that's just kind of the nature of coming in with a new coach and a new philosophy and all those different things. And the competition level that he has created in everyday things, not just in practice, but in the meeting rooms, in the lunchroom. I mean, geez, there's guys like racing each other to the lunch line. There's not. But, I mean, that's the way it feels. It's like every single thing that they do is a competition, and I think that has – that's ultimately going to bear out here in the next few days, and we're going to see kind of who they felt was good enough through that.
And the great thing about competition, the great thing that he brings to this organization and also guys who plan for him is because you're competing so hard to make this individual team, you're going to compete so hard that 31 other teams are also going to catch notice and say, all right, this is a guy we want on our team. This is a guy I saw – for 4 weeks, put it on the line, and each week he flashed for me. And that's what you want. You want to be able to flash on film that guys say, all right, I saw him versus so-and-so, and he made a play, and he's got two, three guys in front of him, but he's still out there fighting his tail off. Those are guys who you find out get on another team when they really take off. And a lot of times it's not their fault. They should be on the team, but just depth-wise, because guys have been around for a while, right, they just, you know, catching the numbers game. But this is a time for guys in the fourth game to really put their imprint on, if I'm not going to be here, I'm definitely going to be somewhere else.
And how many of those guys are going to really come down to Keith Armstrong? Oh, I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys whose fate is decided by Keith Armstrong.
Yeah, you're right about it.
Just the way it goes for those last, you know, three, four, five guys.
Well, I think you and I both have a man crush on Alan Bradford. He's a guy, yeah. I don't think he's on the bubble. As a matter of fact, pencil him in. He's one of the guys that'll dress on Sunday.
Has to be. He's one of those guys who's flashes. Every game you watch him on the special team, you see 53. He's down there first or second with him and Weems, and they're making a play. If he's not making it, then Weems make it. I mean, it's just one of those things. You see him around, and he plays linebacker too. I mean, I saw him do an interview, and he talked about, I just love the opportunity to be out here to play. Yeah. And that tells you right there, he enjoys this experience. He understands where he's at, and he's trying to make the most of it.
You know, there were a couple of cap casualties already in the NFL. I don't even want to say cap casualties. Fred Jackson cut. This guy's been a veteran running back, really good for the Buffalo Bills. You just see people around the league.
I got a buddy of mine, Tim Jennings, in Chicago. Two-time Pro Bowler.
That's the way it goes. I mean, and to see those guys be part of the first round of cuts is so rare, too.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Normally 90 to 75, you can pretty much pick out on any roster and say, this guy's not going to be here. I'm glad I don't have to be in the office this week to cut. Because it's heartbreak. The good thing, though, is there will be players brought back on the practice squad if they clear waivers. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about some of the bubble guys right now that we all think could make it or could be some guys there. Jay, I'll start with you. Of course, you want to go to the offensive line.
I'm going
to
go with the offensive line, and everybody's going to be like, who is this guy? Nobody knows him. Pierce Burton, offensive lineman, has, believe it or not, our good friends over at ProFootballFocus.com, he's in the top five among Falcons with preseason grades through three games. I mean, that's impressive.
That's an impressive stat that you got there. I mean, that's pretty cool.
It is.
I like that.
It is. Because his company are guys like Schofield and Claiborne and guys whom we know have had really good preseasons. So here's a guy who comes in and you think he's just a warm body for camp. Well, he's graded out really, really well as far as Pro Football Focus is concerned. You want to have that developmental depth on the offensive line. I think he's got as good a shot as anybody to make the team. I'd like to see – I'm going to focus on him a little bit this Thursday night, see what he's made of. But, I mean, all indication is that he's having a pretty good preseason, and who knew?
Yeah, and it's just weird. You see those guys who are right on the edge, and they're playing well. They're doing a good job. And for me, like I always mention, you got guys who are flashing. And Tyler Starr is a guy from here. Everybody saw him last year on Hard Knocks. And he's one of those guys who's in a position where they have a lot of depth. They have a lot of guys at this particular position. But I've seen him flash a few times watching the games, and you wonder, is he starting to turn the corner? Is he starting to really understand, hey, I really belong here, and I should deserve a spot?
What was he really good at in college? It was getting after the quarterback. What does Dan Quinn want out of his defensive lineman? Get after the quarterback. By the way, is my mother the only one that had a crush on him during Hard Knocks? Anybody else's family? No, just me? No.
My mother, it was Devontae Freeman. She loves Devontae.
Oh, I'm not wrong with that.
That was the crush.
I got the call every week. Are you sitting next to the guy with the long hair? Could you tell? So one day, Tyler was sitting right behind me. I turned around and I said, dude, this is embarrassing. I said, my mom's got a crush on you. And he just started laughing. What else am I supposed to
do?
Say?
A little FaceTime with your mom?
So no, I was – no.
You didn't go that far, huh?
Because my mom is fairly embarrassing. So. Thanks, but no thanks. My guy that's on the bubble, and I think a lot of people around here that have been paying attention, really like Nick Williams.
Oh, man.
And the question has been, will the Falcons seven wide receivers? Weems is on the team. Hester's on the team. Hankerson, Hardy, White, Julio. That's six guys that are guaranteed on this football team. There's no way any of those guys aren't here. Does Nick Williams end up making the team as a seventh? I think that would almost be unprecedented in the NFL, but here's the scary part. If you do release him, there's no way he makes it back here on the practice squad because there's other teams that need him at receiver.
that's so true. And I was talking about this earlier about with somebody else who thought that Nick Williams could be a guy that could make the roster. And it really becomes a numbers game there. You've really got to make those decisions. I don't think that, you know, him backing up into Hester on that kick return helps him a lot. If you're, yeah. But these are the kinds of things you got to split hairs on some of these things. And, you know, you go out and you draft a Justin Hardy. You sign Hankerson, who's going to be part of the offense. You've got Devin Hester. You're not going to get rid of Eric Weems because he's the best special teamer you've got. So it really does become a numbers game. And it comes down to, can he participate in special teams? There's one ball, and as Terry Rubisky says, if your name's not Roddy or Julio, get on special teams. And if Nick Williams isn't the guy who Keith Armstrong ultimately thinks he could be for the special teams units, he becomes a casualty, I say.
And what's so sad about it is because he's such a versatile player. We've seen him play so many different positions. We've seen him outside. We've seen him inside. We've seen him battle with guys, especially for the ball in the air. And then we see him on special teams. We've seen him. You know, you talk about the issue with, you know, he had with Hester, and you're never supposed to back up if you're that guy. But this is a guy who wants it. This is a guy who's hungry. He's not afraid of the moment. You got Hester, who's, you know,
the greatest Hall of Famer.
He's back there, and he wants the ball as bad as Hester. It's hard to fault a guy like that, and it's hard to, like you mentioned, it's going to be hard to be in that front office up there and say, all right, Nick Williams, you've done a great job for us, but – numbers caught you up. Right. And he's done so well. He's fought so hard. And as a player, I remember those moments is you had all off season. You came into mini camp, OTAs, training camp. You've worked your butt off to get to this point, and it doesn't work out. And I'm not saying this is going to happen for Nick, but I'm just saying this is a situation where you put so much into it, and you just hope it continues. And like you mentioned, there's no way he can stay on somebody's practice squad because of the film that he's put on. Right. That's what we talk about, guys who are flashing, doing big things. He's been one of those players.
And that's maybe the thing that saves him is you know that if he hits that market, he's not going to be there. So you keep him around. This isn't like an unprecedented thing. We've kept, you know, 6-7 wide receivers in the past before. I remember Tim Tune, we had him for a little while, and he, you know, unfortunately got injured the first practice of the regular season. But you had a situation where you kept a lot of wide receivers. The thing is where does that number come off of at another position group? Because that number counts somewhere. So I think that as has been pointed out, I think very clearly on this panel, is that it's a tough decision, and we're glad we're not part of it.
Yeah, this is where the business side, and I love to stress to fans, the business side of this is tough.
Yeah.
We get to know these players. We travel with them, get to hang out with them, you know. And all of a sudden you see a guy that's here on a Thursday, and then Saturday he's not here any longer. And you have to remember, these are a lot of them, I say kids, they're in their 20s. This is their first real job, and they're trying to earn themselves a living. And unfortunately, it does come to an end. But with all the guys we just mentioned, they've all put, you know, good tape together in this preseason. If they don't make it here, they're going to make it somewhere else. Another guy that's going to be fighting, trying to put some tape down this week, Sean Renfrey. TJ Yates got the majority of the snaps a week ago. I know Matt was in there for a little bit. What does Sean have to do? Because I'm going to assume Rex Grossman's going to get some snaps as well.
I'm going to pass this one to DJ.
You know, to the QB.
To the cube.
Here's the thing. I'm going to start with TJ. TJ had a lot of snaps in the last game versus Miami. But for me, when I look at the overall part of that game, I don't think he hurt himself, but I also don't believe he did anything to really help himself. Nothing really stood out, and there were still times where he was inconsistent. Then there were times where he had some balls. He was like, whew, that looked good. That was a big-time throw. And when you go to Sean, he's going to get his chance to get out there, and I think he's going to get majority of the snaps, just like TJ played almost three quarters. You know, he's going to have time to show them what he's really about. And for me, Sean has to go out. He has to put together some drives. He has to consistently show that he can run this offense, make some checks, get him out of bad plays into good plays, and then drive him down to get scores, get touchdowns, get field goals, because ultimately that's what the game's about. And if he can do that and not turn the football over, be consistent in what he's doing, I think he has a great chance of being that other guy. And I really believe this is all about Sean and Rex right now and their pecking order. I believe you really didn't bring Rex in here for a 1 week to play, you know, a quarter of football and you cut him. Sean has to go out and say, all right, this is why you should choose me over another guy. And he has to go out and prove it. But the biggest thing is he has to put together some key drives. He has to put them in the end zone and show them that he is ready to run this offense.
Remember a year ago, TJ did that in Jacksonville. Yeah. And suddenly he went out and he looked like, you know, he looked like Steve Bartkowski. He was throwing the ball everywhere, and that's how he made a football team.
Yeah.
And I was watching Rex Grossman warm up Devin Hester this last game, and, you know, my God, can he whip a ball? Mm-hmm. I mean, he can really put some spin on it. We've heard it from a couple of different players. They were really impressed with his arm strength. You know, getting – he understands the system. He's been in the system before. I think it's a mountain for Renfrey to climb, even though he's had some really good tape that he's put together over the last couple of years.
Right.
It's just a crowded position, and I think – in this case, you might just see veterans kind of win out.
And that's where it's tough for guys. You talk crowded positions. We've mentioned the receivers. We've mentioned defensive line. There's a lot of places where the Falcons are pretty stacked, and there's guys going to be there. It's time to loosen things up now. We're going to break with Bosek. He was nice enough to take that awful picture of me in that peach polo jacket. Why I decided to wear that, I don't know. Actually, I do. I actually went out and purchased that thing. So there was a reason.
J. Mike, you know, you laid that thing out and said, I'm going to kill him with this one tomorrow. Yeah.
I had that set out from like June. I said, man, we're playing Miami in the preseason. I'm not touching this until then.
Yeah. He didn't get three steps on the bus before we were all like,
woo! Oh, you guys were waiting. When I pulled up in the parking lot, everybody was like, does he have on peach? Is that what color he's went with?
Yes. Is that a salmon or a peach? What is that?
I don't know what it was. Bo kept calling it pink.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
First off, you guys were supposed to talk in a golf voice.
We forgot about that. Well, Mr. Producer, you didn't tell us.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Bosek.
Well, here goes Bosek setting up the question here. He's got about an 18-foot
It's going to go a little bit left to right there, Jay. Yeah. Go towards Ray's Creek.
So, last week, Jay mentioned a break with Bosek question, potentially. What was your worst interview? So I want to ask you guys, what was your worst interview?
Worst interview.
Or DJ as a player?
Mine's simple. I'll start. I worked with Mike Bell for years over at the old station, and we were all excited. We got 50 Cent on. We were like, this is awesome. Now, he was in Vegas. I don't know if he was promoting a fight. I really don't know what he was doing during the interview. Let's just say his focus wasn't on us. Our theory was either he was, you know, tipping a few back. Maybe there was five or six ladies there. We're not sure. The problem was typically when you do an interview, I'll ask you a question. You talk to a certain point, and then when I hear that pause, I go ahead and jump back in and ask another question. 50 was giving the dramatic pause for everything. So Mike and I just kept jumping in, and he'd just keep talking. And I'm like, oh, no. It was the worst, best interview ever. We got nothing out of him. He did trash Floyd Mayweather a little bit, but Mike and I just kept talking over him the whole time. So it sounded really awkward on the radio.
I told my Ernie Ellis story last week, and he just walked away from me after like two questions. But so I'll go with, you know, I spent 4 years as a high school sports writer in the state of Georgia, and high school players are always the most difficult to interview because it's just something they're not used to.
Right.
A lot of these kids are really shy. You know, they may be great athletes, but they haven't had the training in front of the media and all those different things. So as a reporter, I think it forces you to be more on your game. So I'd been working at the Albany Herald in Albany, Georgia, and I was covering a track meet. And there was this girl who was just phenomenal in the state, just an outstanding runner. Talking, though, she's probably last in the state because I asked a question like, you know, what was it like? You were coming down that last stretch, and her reply was yes. But it wasn't a yes or no question. Like, it was not a closed-ended question. I expected her to
kind of
lend me a little insight here. I'm not a runner, so maybe treat me like I don't know what I'm talking about and educate me. I got yes out of her. I could not.
You couldn't come back from that, huh?
I was just like, you know what? Congratulations, we're done here, and I'm just going to go talk to your coach.
Oh, man, that's classic. Well, mine had to be me getting interviewed. I don't know who it was. I can't remember who it was. I was with the Falcons, and it was after a game, and a reporter comes up to me, and he says, Shock, you put that ball right on him. It was right in his chest. Why do you think he dropped it? I looked at him like, seriously? How am I supposed to know why he dropped it?
Right.
You just said I put it in his chest, so obviously my job is done. How does he drop it? I was like, I'm not sure. You got to go ask him. I was just like thrown from it. Like, how do you expect me to know why he dropped it? I think he's might inferring that maybe it was not a good pass, but it was in his chest.
You've looked at some of the media members that are the esteemed Atlanta media.
Don't know what they're talking about.
No clue. I've been to Final Fours. I've been to Super Bowls. And sitting in the Final Four room, and they're asking, you know, Kentucky players some of the most ridiculous. I'm looking like, what are you asking him? Oh. Or the open-ended questions, yeah. the ones that it's not really a question. So, Shock, you know, the game was played today, and you guys won. And then they just sit there and look at you. Or ask a question.
My biggest pet peeve, talk about the game.
Yeah.
That's not a question. That's right. Asking somebody to do your job for
right.
you.
Right.
I have a Georgia story, like, though, for you.
Were you not here?
Right.
You didn't
exactly.
see, you didn't see it?
Yeah.
You, were, right. you didn't watch this game?
Right. Right. I've got a Georgia story, though, that I think you would really appreciate, because it goes in this line. I would say my second worst interview of all time was David Pollack.
Pollack.
So I had been at the Albany Herald for just a few months, and so I got sent up to Athens. It was like the first day of camp opening. And so there's a big media day.
Yeah.
You got David Green, you got all these guys in there, and I, you know, I'm like, ooh, I don't know what's going on. And so I was there to cover a freshman coming in named Brandon Miller. And he
Miller, yeah.
And he was from our area. He was this outstanding linebacker who was supposed to, you know, he committed to Georgia. He was playing, coming into his first season. So I, in a break with Pollack, with the media, I asked the dumbest question that I could have asked. I said, so, David, how has Brandon Miller grown over the last year? Not remembering that
he's a freshman.
He just met him.
Yeah.
Right?
What
so
did Pollack say?
Pollack gave me the predictable answer that I absolutely deserved. And he said, how the hell am I supposed to know? He's like, why don't you do your homework? He wasn't here late. I'm like, oh.
So he hits you with the homework.
Yeah. And so I'm crushed like, I'm gonna go over here.
Thank you. Say thank you.
And you call your boss and say, can I cover Georgia Tech for the rest of the year?
Yeah, right.
I need to go.
Yeah.
The flip side of all what we're talking about is guys that talk too much. Now, Bill Walton is a great interview because he just, you know that he spoke some good stuff usually before you talk to him. You'll ask him a question and he'll talk for 15 minutes. We had Rick Bucher on. Rick Bucher's been an NBA writer forever. It's Arch, Mike Bell, and I doing a show. And, you know, it's middle of the NBA playoffs. Awesome. We're going to have Rick Bucher on. I asked him a question. He talked for 8.5 minutes to the point. And I'm not
eight
kidding.
8 minutes?
I'm not kidding you. Arch and I were on the ground in studio doing push-ups to see how long. Mike Bell's taking his headset off. He's literally sitting back going, will this guy ever stop? We got two questions out of Rick Bucher in 15 minutes.
Wow.
You're Rick Bucher.
Wow.
Sorry, I don't need to hear you talk for 15 minutes.
He used his platform.
In Falcons country, I always said nobody can eat a tape like Keith Brooking could. You would toss it. I mean, you would just have to go in with a fresh tape anytime you were talking to him. I love him to death. He was always gracious, always very thoughtful with his answers. But he was a tape eater. Holy smokes.
You know, I've never had it worse. You know, the Falcons, the PR staff is really good here for getting guys prepared. And they won't really give us the – you know, if a guy's not good at interviewing, you're not going to get him.
Right.
Steven Nicholas was really fun to talk to because he would just start talking in cliches.
Yeah.
He would start giving you, you know, just random nonsense. He kept looking at my tattoos going, like your tattoos, man.
Picnic.
Like them thing. Where you get them done? I'm like, bro, we're trying to figure out what's going on
Nick
here.
Was
with
the best. Yeah,
Steven Nicholas.
We could do
awesome.
A whole podcast on interviews.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh yeah,
that we've had.
We can have some fun with that. All right, so we're going to move on to this portion of the program now.
We're going over to the 16th hole here.
He's going to have about 145 yards over sand.
There's probably a little pitching wedge coming in.
We're going to go down to David Faraday as he's going to talk to Bosek and see what we have for a video of the week. That's what I was expecting.
Jay, you got a lot of past experiences that throw you away, like, you know, your teacher and all that.
Just catching flashbacks, man.
Yeah, I noticed the duck. When Shock stuck his hand out, you moved like you were Floyd Jr.
Don't give the guy on the couch any more ammunition than he needs and how easily scarable I am.
You should see all snap this past week.
Ooh.
Yeah. That was another thing. He wasn't even doing anything.
He just walked in the room.
So you're a young spook, so you can't go to a haunted house. You're not about that.
No, I am. I love going to haunted houses. I love being scared. But startled is a different story.
Scared and startled.
There you go. Those are your words for the days, kids. We'll go with scared and startled is Jay Adams.
Whenever you see Jay, startle him, all right?
Yeah, see if you can run up behind him at the Ravens game and just go, ah!
Please.
See what happens to him.
Please don't.
He shall be startled.
He won't. We'll be back next week. Obviously, a big preseason game. And next week, guess what we get to talk about?
Let's go, baby.
Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles.
You guys better get your picks to click, Seth. Get ready for the competition on this panel starts.
Oh, with the picks to click next week. No. Do we do like against the spread, or is this just?
We're just picking a player we think is going to have the best game.
Oh, that's easy. That's easy.
How do we determine who gets the first player?
You can't make Matt Ryan or Julio.
You cannot choose Matt or Julio.
Wait, whoa,
those two guys are out.
How do we determine? How do we determine pecking order?
Bosek is the impartial judge.
I mean, but who
that instills a lot of faith in
me. Yeah, okay.
Hold on, Bosek. Hold on. Before we go out of here.
I got a couple bucks for him. I got a 10 here.
Let's make sure I win every week. Make sure that happens. Because I need bragging rights. Guys, it's been a lot of fun, as always. Yes. Appreciate you guys watching. We end the show all the time. See if I got a slider here. Ah, I missed again.